All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparian joins us.
Hi.
Hey. By the way, if you want to get compliments, wear this Covfefe shirt.
That's what Ben said.
Yeah, it's totally true. I was wearing it in New York, and one person after another, like, oh, cool shirt. Oh, I love the shirt. So shoptyt.com. We're in day 7 of a 10-day Black Friday sale.
I think it's weird.
You think the shirt is weird?
No, I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get
okay.
The shirt.
The usual over the top honesty you get from the Young Turks. But the great thing about it, Anna, is you don't have to get it.
I guess not. I mean, there's a lot of things I don't get.
Yeah.
So.
No, but people, I'm telling you, not recognizing me, just like random dudes off the street and women are like, ooh, I love the shirt.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I'm just telling you. That's the conversation that's happening. Okay, Bonita Yarborough writes, and of course Roy Moore is going to win. It's Alabama. They'd rather a pedophile than a Democrat. We're going to find out soon enough. John Brugliera says Doug Jones is weak on crime. Does that mean if Roy Moore wins, he'll arrest himself? Good question. There is no statute of limitations on child molestation in Alabama, so he could arrest himself. Zoe says invoking Ivanka Trump is brilliant. It appeals to all stripes of Republicans. Good job. Papa G says he's weak on border, like the border with Mexico is a major problem in Alabama. But you know that in places like Oklahoma, which now apparently is turning progressive, but
what?
A woman won in a seat that Trump had won by over 30 points, 26-year-old lesbian mom. Okay.
That's pretty amazing.
Yes, it's one of the reddest districts in the country, and she won.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened last Tuesday. Anyway, but Oklahoma passed a law against Sharia law. They're like, Sharia law is about to take over Tulsa, so we got to act now.
Priorities. That's important.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me see justicedemocrats.com/winning. $3,625. 196 donors. Can I see 200 donors? That's not too much to ask for. By the end of the show, can I see 250 donors? Doesn't matter, $3, anything, okay? It's a big, big difference to those just Democratic candidates that we told you about, including one of you guys, one of the first TYT members ever, is running in Kansas, and he has an excellent chance of winning. All right, now on to the usual depressing second hour stories that have been happening lately.
Yes. All right. CBS has officially decided to part ways with Charlie Rose following allegations of sexual harassment that the Washington Post reported on earlier this week. Now, the report indicated that there were 8 women who had worked with Charlie Rose and granted interviews to Washington Post, some on the condition of anonymity, while others did say that they were comfortable revealing what their identity was. Now, 3 of the women came out and said, this is my first and last name, here's what I experienced when I was working for Charlie Rose, and we want to go ahead and expose, you know, some of his behavior. But 5 other women are worried about the ramifications of coming forward, so they decided to remain anonymous. Now, just to quickly detail some of the accusations against him, he was accused of making lewd phone calls to these women, walking around naked in their presence, and also groping their breasts and genital areas. Now, this didn't happen at CBS Studios. This oftentimes happened in his own home in New York. And what he would do is invite them to come over and work at a desk that he had in his own personal home. And in a lot of those instances, according to these allegations, he would prey on these women or take advantage of them. Now, 5 described Rose putting his hand on their leg, sometimes their upper thigh, in what they perceived as a test to gauge their reactions. 2 said that while they were working for Rose at his residences or while traveling with him on business, he emerged from the shower and walked naked in front of them. 1 said he groped her buttocks at a staff party. So I'm going to have some more specific allegations in just a minute. But again, CBS decided to part ways. He was also suspended at PBS. It's likely he will. I don't know actually what PBS is planning on doing.
They'll fire. That's my prediction.
That's my prediction, exactly. But they did suspend him immediately.
So we've gone over a lot of these over the last couple of weeks because this is a watershed moment. This is when we've hit a tipping point and women have the courage to come forward and say we're not going to take it anymore. Some, as we have discussed throughout the weeks, are tougher cases. Mm-hmm. And you know, and we've had tough conversations about them, and people have criticized on all sides. And that's normal because we do commentary on these really difficult topics. Charlie Rose is not a difficult case. You read the whole long article, and as always, we'll have the link in the description box. And you will see that it was a disaster. And he did it over and over again. And first of all, the shower trick. I didn't know it was a thing that existed.
Yeah.
But anyone doing the shower trick is, you know, is clearly doing it. I mean, who wants to watch a 70-year-old guy taking a shower when they're their intern or their staffer, et cetera, right? No, it's obvious that it's the same MO every time. Oh, I need to work from home. You need to help me at home. You need to rearrange my books, my shelves, et cetera. And in the beginning, he's fine. And almost all of them describe a combination of fury and flattery. Like, if you do something wrong, he's going to get really mad at you. But then he's going to give you some compliments. And in the beginning, it's fine. And they drive around and they go to his house. And then at some point, there'll be drinks or there'll be a dinner or something. And next thing you know, he's taking a shower. And then he'll say from the shower, can you come here for a second? And then he comes out with a robe, but the robe is wide open. You know, I used to hear these stories well after he got caught about Gary Hart, mm-hmm. right? And now then Harvey Weinstein, and now Charlie Rose, it's not just that he keeps showing himself naked to these women; he then grabs them. Now he's a goner. He's done.
Yeah, look, there are so many things. Look, even I believe the women, especially considering the fact that there were so many of them. These incidents were corroborated by the Washington Post, meaning that they reached out to family members and individuals who knew the victims and spoke to them to make sure that, you know, what they were saying was true. Like at the time of this alleged abuse, which was, by the way, between the 1990s and 2011, did this individual confide in you that this happened? And they corroborated the case. But more importantly, Charlie Rose himself has fessed up to it. And I'll get to his statement in just a minute. But look, even if someone wants to make the case that, like, no, this was consensual, anytime someone is working under you, right? If you are an employer, if you are the boss, and in this case, he's the boss, you have power over these people. These women were low-level employees, meaning they were assistants or assistant producers, were hoping to work their way up within the company, right? And so the issue of consent becomes incredibly fuzzy when you're talking about an employer having any type of sexual involvement with someone who's working under him.
And so to be clear, by the way, this was his own company, which is kind of a side gig, mm-hmm. Not CBS and PBS employees. So he was able to bring them to his side gig.
Yep.
And then there's no HR.
Right.
You know, there's less protections. And then he had his longtime helper, I forget if she was an assistant or something.
Actually, his executive producer, her name is Yvette Vega. And according to the Washington Post report, the women, the accusers, went to her on multiple occasions. And she was quoted as saying, that's just Charlie being Charlie.
Now she says she deeply regrets having done that. But everybody knew, as a producer calls a young woman who's going over to Charlie's house and says, are you okay? Are you sure you're okay? So to be fair, it's not right to say everybody knew, because there's a lot of things that people don't know.
Right.
But at least some people knew that, hey, if a young girl goes to Charlie Rose's house, you got to ask her if she's okay. And the most haunting story was near the end of the article, where there's a very detailed explanation of how he lured this one woman in, and then he gets naked, and then he starts touching her, and she realizes, oh my God, I'm in this secluded area and I have nowhere to run.
Right.
And she's crying and he's still going, right? And it felt like, honestly, like the movie Get Out.
Uh-huh.
Like she's trapped and she can't get out.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
And it's what I notice, and it's a common reaction among all the women who are coming forward right now is for the longest time they blame themselves, right? And they felt like they did something wrong or they did something that might have invited it. And now they're finally coming forward and realizing, no, I mean, I'm a person who had no position of power, who wanted to get ahead in this extremely competitive field of work. And he saw that and took advantage of that.
And by the way, by getting ahead, what they mean is, oh my God, it's such an amazing opportunity to work with a person they thought was a legendary reporter, an anchor, an interviewer. And so they're like, okay, but people say he's quirky. I can deal with quirky to get this amazing job in journalism. And it turns out quirky is way worse than they imagined.
So I want to read you just a couple of the specific allegations that were detailed in the Washington Post. Obviously, we can't get into every single one of them, or else we'd dedicate an entire show to it. But you should read the piece, which we will link to in the description box. Kyle Godfrey Ryan, who was one of the accusers, one of Rose's assistants in the mid-2000s, recalled at least a dozen instances where Rose walked nude in front of her while she worked in one of his New York City homes. He also repeatedly called the then 21-year-old late at night or early in the morning to describe his fantasies of her swimming naked in the Bellport pool. That's a reference to where he lived, as he watched from his bedroom. The young women who were hired by the show were sometimes known as Charlie's Angels. Two former employees said Rose frequently gave unsolicited shoulder rubs to several of them. Behavior referred to among employees as the crusty paw, a former employee said.
Me.
That's just, yeah. A woman then in her 30s who was at the Bellport home in 2010 to discuss a job opportunity said Rose appeared before her in an untethered bathrobe, naked underneath. She said he subsequently attempted to put his hands down her pants. So it just goes on and on. And I want to read you the reaction from Charlie Rose. Let's go to graphic 50. He says that he's greatly embarrassed. I have behaved insensitively at times, and I accept responsibility for that, though I do not believe that all of these allegations are accurate. I always felt that I pursued shared feelings, though I now realize that I was mistaken. So he's not taking full responsibility or full ownership, but his argument is, well, I thought it was consensual.
Yeah, but when you ask women to come and into the shower when you're not in any kind of relationship with them, what made you think that was in any way consensual? What a weird thing to ask. Sometimes the woman would be driving him, or she'd be in the passenger seat, and he just started grabbing her breasts. You thought that was mutual? Wait, if you guys are dating and you want to have fun, that's a different thing. You're not at all dating. She works under you.
Yeah.
And every time they'd be like, oh my God, what's happening? Charlie Rose is grabbing my breast in the middle of this car. This is insane. A male colleague told one of the women involved, quote, oh, you got the shower trick.
Yeah, so it's somewhat known. But again, like, you don't know to what extent, because there were people quoted in the Washington Post piece who did work with Rose, and they said that they never experienced or noticed anything questionable.
And
so not everyone knows everything.
No, of course, and I want to be super clear about that. I mean, sometimes people get carried away and, oh yeah, Rush Limbaugh today, of course. Oh, all of his female anchors must have known that. How would they know what the hell's going on in his home? Apparently, some people knew because they'd warned some of the women, right? But obviously, like, why would Norah O'Donnell know anything about this? Why would Gayle King know anything about this? And remember what predators do. They do it to the powerless, not to the powerful. He's not going to grope Norah O'Donnell because she would fight back. And she has power to fight back. Instead, he finds young girls, lures them where they can't run, does the shower trick, etc. There's 8 accusers here, and 3 of them are on the record. He's done.
Yeah, so I do want to go to the reaction of his former co-hosts, Gayle King and Norah O'Donnell. They addressed the Charlie Rose allegations on the show today, CBS This Morning to be specific. Let's take a look at the first video.
I got an hour and 42 minutes of sleep last night. Both my son and my daughter called me. Oprah called me and said, are you okay? I am not okay. After reading that article in the Post, it was deeply disturbing, troubling, and painful for me to read. That said, I think we have to make this matter to women, the women that have spoken up, the women who have not spoken up because they're afraid. I'm hoping that now they will take the step to speak out too, that this becomes a moment of truth.
So that was Gayle King, and she was understandably and justifiably upset and disturbed by, you know, the allegations that came forward. Now Norah O'Donnell also said something, and I wanted to go to her statement. So let's take a look at that.
This is a moment that demands a frank and honest assessment about where we stand and more generally the safety of women. Let me be very clear. There is no excuse for this alleged behavior. It is systematic and pervasive. And I've been doing a lot of listening, and I'm going to continue to do that. This I know is true. Women cannot achieve equality in the workplace or in society until there is a reckoning and a taking of responsibility. I'm really proud to work at CBS News. There are so many incredible people here, especially on this show, all of you here. This will be investigated. This has to end. This behavior is wrong, period.
So a lot of strong statements coming from his former co-host, which is good.
Yes, they're put in a terribly awkward position, and it's not on them, it's on Charlie Rose who did all this. And unfortunately, it's true what people say, which is that since he was quote unquote successful and powerful, and I know a lot of people who love Charlie Rose. I'm not one of them. I think he does pedestrian interviews, and everybody always says he's like, "Oh, the legendary Charlie Rose." He asks very normal questions. Anyway, but that's not important. But people put him up on a pedestal, and so when he's got that kind of power, it becomes harder for people to challenge him, because if a young woman comes out and says Charlie Rose did this and this, that Charlie Rose makes a lot of money for people.
Yep.
And he's got a lot of prestige, and all those people know him, presumably like him, and they're gonna. It's going to take a lot for them to side with her instead of Charlie Rose. That is why this watershed moment is so important, because so many people have come forward and have had the courage to come forward, that they're coming forward at eight at a time. And that was the case of Charlie Rose. By the way, those are eight that came forward. Are there others that didn't come forward? Are there others that he did this to, but you know, and they don't want to talk about it. They're horrified, mortified about what happened. So he's been doing this for a long time. And even if you loved him and you thought he was a great interviewer, it's not an excuse. And so it is what it is, and I think that's probably the end of Charlie Rose's career.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll move on to other news, including a herpes researcher who went around injecting people with the herpes virus without any government oversight.
You know why? libertarian principles. We'll explain when we come back. All right, back at the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. So in the last segment, we did a story about Charlie Rose. A lot of you have been asking on air, or online, I should say, about Jordan Chariton. We're not legally allowed to comment on it yet. And I know that's greatly frustrating to people, but it is most frustrating to us. And part of the reason that we're not allowed to comment on it is to protect people's privacy, including Jordan's. So now, you either trust us on that or you don't. By the way, we will be able to comment on it later. But some folks, for example, are saying, "Oh, that's it. I'm going to cancel my membership." Hey, do whatever you got to do. We're trying to be as fair as humanly possible in these situations. I don't think that anyone has, meaning anyone online that is not involved in this, has all the facts. But if without all the facts you want to say, "No, I've already made up my mind," there's nothing we can do about that. We hope that you trust us, that we're trying to look out for everyone involved. And we will comment on it as soon as we can. And like I said, it is deeply frustrating that we can't yet. So that's that. So I do want to thank our members of the day, Jeffrey Wheeler and Lady Garzone. Anna, you probably didn't see did this story on the Just Democrats. Brent Welder in Kansas has a good chance of winning, and he was one of the first TYT members. And I love that. And he was a Wolfpack volunteer as well. Oh God, it'd be great to have. So we had a Wolfpack supporter who became a state rep in New Hampshire. And that was so gratifying. And it's now beginning to happen all over the country. And now to start getting people into the US Congress would be amazing. For those of you who do choose to support us, thank you guys from the bottom of our hearts. TYTnetwork.com/join. All right, your tweets are Vance saying it's one thing to have someone on point to listen for you, referring to Charlie Rose, in case you fall in the shower or hurt yourself. I mean, he was in his 60s in some of these accusations. It's an entirely different situation to have someone watch you shower. That's just harassment. Of course it is. There is no other explanation than harassment for, can you please watch me take a naked shower? There's no other fact pattern that fits. Okay, Kimberly Colbert says the entire male gender needs to hold a meeting and establish boundaries. Well, in a sense, we're doing that in a meta way throughout the country. All right, guys, what's next, Adam?
All right. Back in 2013, a microbiologist from Illinois decided it would be a great idea to completely bypass any government oversight or regulation and test out a herpes vaccine that he created himself on people in the US. He later moved his clinical trials abroad. However, in 2013, there were as many as 8 individuals who were tested using this vaccine. They were injected, and now they are facing some of the ramifications of that decision. Now, this microbiologist is no longer alive. He died last year due to cancer, but he was associated with the Southern Illinois University. He was Associate Professor William Hatford, and he administered the shots himself at a Holiday Inn Express and a Crown Plaza hotel that were 15 minutes away from the researcher's lab. Hatford injected at least 8 herpes patients on 4 separate occasions in the summer and fall of 2013 with a virus that he created. Now, the idea behind the vaccine was inject them with a different form of the herpes virus, and somehow, you know, maybe that would cure them of the herpes strain that they currently have. But according to some of the individuals who have been injected, that is not what happened. And again, this was done without any government oversight. So according to the emails between Hatford and the patients, extensive interviews with a participant, Hatford did not procure written informed consent as required by federal law when testing a live virus on humans. Medical researchers such as Hatford may not inject patients without oversight by a physician or a nurse practitioner. By the way, again, he was a microbiologist. He was not a physician. And as a result, he was not allowed to do these injections in the first place. And he knew what the rules were, but he decided to go against them. And the Southern Illinois University is facing a lot of heat right now because it seems as though they were supportive of his efforts. Peter Thiel, who's a well-known libertarian, was one of the investors in this effort to cure herpes. Also, one patient or one participant who says he received the injections in Illinois fears that the vaccine, which contains a live virus, may have given him a new and different type of herpes he did not have. So the type of herpes he originally had was the type that that results in mouth sores and things like that. He was injected with the genital herpes strain.
Oops.
And now he, according to what he's saying, is experiencing symptoms of the genital herpes.
Yeah, so if someone says, hey, I've got a virus for you, come get it injected at the Holiday Inn Express, say no. So these are sometimes difficult situations, and I'll tell you why. It's not always black and white. Because sometimes people have life-threatening conditions, and FDA has to, for good reason, move slowly. Because you want to make sure that you've tested it in labs, on animals, and then eventually very carefully on humans. And you don't want to rush that process, otherwise you'll have disasters. And if you've got a life-threatening condition, you can be very frustrated by the pace at which the Food and Drug Administration goes.
Right.
Now, this is not one of those situations, and I'm not minimizing the pain and suffering that these people with herpes live with, okay? Especially the ones that went through this extraordinary process to try to get rid of that pain and suffering. But there's a reason why the FDA goes through that process. Because if you don't go through that process, oops, we just gave you herpes 2 when you only had herpes 1. Oops, in one of the cases, is the leg develops a giant rash and then a blister, and
right.
and we can't have a doctor running this out of a hotel room. You've got to do it the right way. But you know, Peter Thiel, I don't know if this has to do with his libertarian principles, but the idea is rules. We don't want them. We don't want regulations. When you're talking about injecting people with a herpes virus, yes, you want regulations. You want to do it right, so you don't have this kind of out of control runaway situation. There's a reason why we have rules and laws.
So I agree with you. Obviously, I agree with you, especially when it comes to these types of clinical trials, because you're doing an experiment that could really destroy people's lives, right? And so there's a reason why there's a government entity doing oversight to ensure that people remain safe. And that's not to say that people are always going to, you know, get the outcome that they want from these clinical trials, but it is important to have, you know, a regulatory body keeping an eye on things and making sure that people don't get hurt. With that said, though, you know, there are cases where, you know, I think the healthcare industry is overregulated. So, you know, you go to Europe and you hurt yourself, you know, you don't have to go to a doctor to get a prescription and then go to the pharmacy and then hope that they, you know. If I get hurt in Europe, for instance, which by the way recently happened when I lost my voice and I got laryngitis, went to the pharmacy and I told them what happened and they gave me the drugs I needed, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, I feel like it works out pretty well for people in Europe. And I don't know why we have certain laws in place or regulations in place that make it so incredibly hard to get the treatment that you need when you need it. But
so conservatives have this, and libertarians especially, have this idea that liberals want to control your life and that's why they pass burdensome regulations on purpose. No, liberals want people to get out of their lives. So that's not why it happens. But does that, like, is every regulation by definition a good thing? Of course not. You've got to find the right balance of regulations. And sometimes regulations get outdated. Mm-hmm. So for example, in Los Angeles, they had this rule that you had to have a garage for your cars. Why? Nobody knows. It was probably left over from the 1930s when that was a really important thing, right? Uh-huh. And then finally they were like, oh right, we don't need this. And then they got rid of it. Okay, and so that happens and that's normal. And maybe we'll get to a place like Europe where we can have a medicine dispensed to us at the pharmacies in the way that you got it. But remember also in Europe, they had to approve that medicine first.
Right.
It's not like they're like, I don't know, this is oregano sauce mixed with shaman voodoo, right?
I know that, yes. So of course the medicine has to be approved. I'm just saying that, you know, it's a lot harder to get the medicines you need to get better here in the United States. And like in Europe, it's funny because when I get sick in Europe, which I always somehow get sick or hurt myself in Europe, I don't know why, but I always rest easy because I'm like, oh, I'm just going to go to a pharmacy and they're going to hook it up. And they always do.
Or you can go to a hospital and they'll take care of you. It's crazy. They actually don't let you die in the streets in Europe. Yeah. What a crazy continent. Okay, so last things here. So sometimes though, it depends on the corporate power involved, because as the FDA is sometimes frustratingly slow, sometimes it is way too fast. So OxyContin, for example, got approved without doing clinical studies. Oops, turns out it's opium on steroids, kind of, almost literally. Mm-hmm. Okay, and guess who, the guy who approved it at the FDA, you're not gonna believe where he wound up working a couple of years later. At Purdue Pharma, the makers of OxyContin. What a wonderful coincidence.
Yeah.
So if you've got a hookup like that, well then all of a sudden your stuff gets approved even without clinical studies.
Right, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, so the right answer is balanced regulation and a government that actually works for us and not corporate interests.
All right, moving on to something absolutely different. The Justice Department is aggressively going after Harvard University for its alleged affirmative action policies. Now, recently the Justice Department sent a letter to Harvard indicating that it is not complying with certain rules and as a result needs to comply or could face further investigation. So let me just give you some background into this. Back in 2015, there was a group of Asian students who filed a suit against Harvard University because they believe that they were rejected from the school as a result of its affirmative action policies. Now, right now, there are private lawyers involved in this case, but the Justice Department has decided that it wants to get involved because Jeff Sessions has been very clear about the fact that he is against these affirmative action policies and wants to ensure that, you know, race is not a factor in deciding whether or not students get admitted. Now, last year, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that race can be one among many factors universities use in making admission decisions. So that's an important thing to bring up because the fact of the matter is, if a school decides to use race as a factor in deciding whether or not someone gets admitted, it is just one factor, literally one of many factors. They still take academics into account. They still take, you know, extracurricular activities into account. But race might be one of the factors that could help them make a decision if you have a very competitive pool of people applying. Now, the Justice Department has concluded that the school is, quote, out of compliance with federal law. Now, some people might read that and think, oh, that means that they're going against what the Supreme Court said that they can do. That is not the case. The reality is the Justice Department sent a letter to Harvard saying you need to give us your documents and your files because we want to do an investigation. You have until November 2nd to do so. And then Harvard didn't reply until several days after the due date. So that's what they mean when they say Harvard is not complying. The Justice Department, by the way, the letter says that the Justice Department's interest in Harvard's policies do stem from this 2015 federal complaint that accuses the school of discriminating against Asian Americans in admissions. So I have some really interesting data about you know, the student body at Harvard and also the number of people that get admitted due to legacy admissions. But I just want to open it up to you, Cenk. Thoughts on this?
All right. I think this is a hard case. Are Asian Americans discriminated against because of affirmative action? Yes, undoubtedly, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Whenever you take away affirmative action in a place like California and Texas, the schools become overwhelmingly Asian, just a fact. Mm-hmm. So when you see schools, great schools like Harvard, kind of, still mad at them for the Chelsea Manning debacle, mm-hmm. That doesn't have Asian Americans in that percentage, you know that they're putting their thumb on the scale for other groups and some for very legitimate reasons, but they are putting the thumb on the scale and Asian Americans are being discriminated against. So I don't like affirmative action. I know exactly why it was needed, and it's true that it was needed in the beginning because it was a good old boys network, and white kids would be allowed in because their parents went in, etc. And everybody involved was white. It was absolutely necessary in the beginning. It is now. It basically stigmatizes different groups. So I've heard a million times, oh, how do you think he got in, referring to a minority student?
Right.
And that drives me nuts. But now, by the way, you should be saying it about white people. So if you see a white kid at a school, you should be asking, how did he get in? And it might be because there's a thumb on the scale and they had to have more whites because they just don't want the schools to be 60% Asian. And the other reason might be because Papa went there, because of the legacy numbers that Anna's about to tell you.
Right. So it's I think that this whole affirmative action issue is like, it like represents like a microcosm of a larger, like broader issue in society where we always focus on attacking the powerless. And while we're doing so, while we're distracted by that, the real issues are taking place and we're completely unaware of them. So this gives that example because the people who are robbing the intelligent, hardworking people who should be admitted based on merit are not the black students. It's people who have parents who went to Harvard or to these Ivy Leagues. Yep. Okay, so a recent report looked into the incoming class at Harvard, the class that is set to graduate in 2021, and it's made up of 29% legacy students, meaning
outrageous.
That 29%, that's nearly one third, right? Okay, so 29% of these people basically got admitted for that reason. And why I say that reason is because if you have a parent that went to Harvard, you're 3 times more likely to get accepted.
You want to talk about affirmative action? We have affirmative action for rich people, we do. And people that are already in power, and I'll include myself, put aside the wealth. Look, I have a certain degree of privilege now because I went to Penn and Columbia, so my kids have a better chance of going to, apparently, roughly 3 times better chance of getting into Penn and Columbia, which are good schools. That's not fair. Why should my kids have an advantage over your kids in West Virginia or your kids in the Bronx? Actually, those guys, your kids have to fight harder. They're under more difficult situations. I happen to have a really good public school in my neighborhood that my kids go to. Mm-hmm. You might have a terrible public school that your kid has to go to, and he fights beyond that, and if he gets good grades, he shouldn't be punished, he should be rewarded. You want to do affirmative action based on income level? That makes sense. But you have to take race out of it, if you ask me, and the most important thing is you have to take legacy out of it. And you want to know why they do that? Because the most important factor in whether you donate to a school is if 2 generations of the family have gone. So they're doing it for the money. And so
you're right.
29%. And by the way, remember, in the old days, the good schools did not have the smartest students. They had the most well-connected students. Princeton and Harvard did not do admissions based on intelligence and SAT scores in the 1940s and 50s, etc. They did it based on whether Papa was an important person. That's why even George W. Bush is a knucklehead. He had straight C's on a good day, on a good semester. And he got into Yale and Harvard because his dad was connected. Now his kids, for generation after generation, have an unfair advantage over your kids who are working so hard under much more difficult situations. It is grossly unfair.
And by the way, I feel like this is a testament to how powerful propaganda is. Because again, if you look at the student body at Harvard, do we have those graphics by any chance? There we go. Okay, so this is on Harvard's website, by the way. They like to tout their diversity. So if you look at the breakdown, the ethnic diversity of undergraduate students at Harvard, you will see that the black or African American community within that school is just a tiny sliver, tiny sliver. And by the way, the black students who do get admitted tend to come from wealthier families. So socioeconomic status is actually one of the most important factors that I think is taken into account when students get admitted. And I have another stat that will further explain that, and that's the faculty at Harvard. So if you see the vast majority of faculty, nearly 70% at Harvard is white, 9% non-resident alien, and then so on and so forth. But 40% of students overall, college age students, receive Pell Grants, 40%. But if you look at Ivy League schools, Pell Grant recipients only account for 16%. Now, Pell Grants indicate these people need a little bit of financial help or financial support. They can't pay for the tuition on their own. You think Ivy Leagues are gonna, give them the upper hand when it comes to admissions? Hell no.
Unfortunately, what the top schools in this country have done is, again, redistributed the wealth, but to the top. So now, if your legacy and you're already, in a privileged position, well, you're gonna get even more privilege, right? And if you're in a tough spot, you're gonna get less Pell Grants at the good schools. Mm-hmm. And of the white students who are going to Harvard, what percentage of them are legacy? And I don't know, but my guess is it's higher than 29%. You think a lot of the black students are a legacy? Maybe some, but I doubt that it's at 29%. So another case of affirmative action for white kids. If Harvard's 16% Asian, you take away affirmative action, watch 16 turn to 60 overnight. And so are Asians being discriminated against? Absolutely. And look, on the socioeconomic stuff, it It's maddening that they flipped it on its head. Okay, I want to squeeze in one more story.
Okay, I'm actually going to fast forward to the Sacha Baron Cohen story because it's light and it's fun, and let's end on that. Mm-hmm. Okay. A group of tourists in Kazakhstan were arrested after they wore the so-called mankini that Borat wore in his 2006 movie. Now it's the banana boat mankini thing. Okay, there's the picture. I apologize if it makes you uncomfortable. I probably should have warned you. But either way, that was just a funny part of the Borat film. And people who go and do tourism in Kazakhstan think it's funny to wear the mankini, except police in Kazakhstan do not find it funny, and they have decided to arrest this group of tourists who were seen on the beach wearing pretty much the exact same thing, including the Borat afro. Now, Sacha Baron Cohen, who is of course the personality behind Borat, is saying that he will pay for the fines that these individuals have been given as a result of what they were wearing. He says, let's go to graphic 63, to my Czech mates who were arrested, send me your details and prove that it was you and I'll pay your fine. It's interesting though, because that movie led to a tenfold increase of tourism in Kazakhstan, but Kazakhstan hates the movie. They've banned it, they've banned the DVD sales. People are really sensitive about it. It's kind of amazing.
No, unfortunately, in a lot of parts of the world, the leadership of these countries are way overly sensitive. Again, Erdogan in Turkey is raging about some European country because somebody like drew a mustache on him or something. I don't remember the exact details, but you have greatly offended me. And Ataturk, maybe. In Turkey, the national sport is oil wrestling.
Yeah.
But when gay people from around the world started showing up to oil wrestling, right? They're like, how dare you? And they canceled their own national sport. Okay, for a while they wouldn't allow it, now it's back. Okay, it's insane. Just take the tenfold increase in tourism and call it a day. That's
have
a wonderful thing. Yes.
Yeah, have some fun, man. By the way, one person said the following in regard to the mankini. They should have a criminal charge for insulting the honor of the nation. Just chill out.
Calm down with your honor, okay? And anytime anybody's talking about honor, run for the hills. They're about to do something terrible.
Right.
Okay, all right, guys. There's only 10 hats left, I hear, for TYT hats for member. It says member in the back. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member and shop TYT.com. Black Friday sale going on now. Okay, post game, we'll see you members there. Bye-bye.